Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
At first, they told us it was just a long-needed correction, and it could be over in a day or two. Now a lot of market analysts have adjusted their wording. It's still a correction. Just add the word extended. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years, with a commitment to provide objective financial advice. Coverage of Asia is supported by the Freeman Foundation.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon in for Kai Ryssdal. Good to have you with us on this March 2nd, a Friday that probably couldn't come soon enough for some investors who watch the stock market keep right on falling today. And now investors seem to be worried this spiral could continue for a while. Why? That's the question analysts have been asking all week. And today, David Walker, the country's comptroller general, posits one important cause. Investors are worried that we're brimming with red ink. It's not just government spending, but personal debt that could make it hard to bail the country out if foreign investors stop propping us up. He says what happened this week might be the wake-up call the country needs.
I don't think that we should read too much into what happened in one given day or one given week of the market. But I do think that we have to recognize reality. And it's time that we start making tough choices in order to mitigate the risk and to hopefully avoid a larger crisis from occurring in the future.
So how are we doing so far? The Congressional Budget Office said today that President Bush's spending plan for the next fiscal year narrowly fails to balance the nation's books by 2012. A couple of senators have come up with a plan for turning back the tide of debt, a bipartisan commission with some special clout. Nancy Marshall Genzer reports.
Nobody on Capitol Hill has been able to come up with a way to let the air out of ballooning budget deficits. Former Office of Management and Budget Chief Leon Panetta says Congress made things worse by backing new initiatives, such as the Medicare Prescription Drug Program, without paying for them.
We've borrowed not only for the tax cuts, we've borrowed for the war, we've borrowed for prescription drugs. We have got to deal with this issue.
The chairman and ranking member of the Senate Budget Committee have agreed on the framework for a bill that would create a bipartisan budget commission. If the legislation is approved, the new panel would be chaired by Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson and include the heads of congressional finance and budget committees. They'd have the equivalent of congressional superpowers, so-called fast-track authority. Maya McGinnis of the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget says that means limited debate, no time-consuming amendments, and a straight up or down vote on the commission's proposals.
The focus is to get people to say, we've come up with a package that is kind of the best of all of the solutions, and you have to vote yay or nay.
McGinnis says the commission's star power could help it force Congress to make tough choices, such as raising taxes.
We're going to have to slow the growth of spending on both retirement benefits and health care benefits, and we're going to have to increase the revenues that support these programs. There's no real free lunches here to fixing these programs.
The commission's prospects are uncertain in the House. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Venezuela's President Hugo Chavez said this week his government will take over control of four key oil projects, including one held by ExxonMobil. And he set an ambitious 60-day deadline for the handover. Publicly, Exxon has balked, but a new report suggests the world's largest oil company is now prepared to make a deal with Chavez. From the America's Desk at WLRN, Marketplace's Dan Gretsch reports.
Exxon is considered one of the toughest negotiators in the oil world. So when Reuters reported the oil giant would hand over control of the project, many observers were surprised. They'd expected a big battle. Brian Ellsworth covers oil for Reuters.
I certainly wouldn't say that Exxon is bending over by doing this. What we can say is we won't expect to see troops go in and take over this field.
He says Exxon could still sue Venezuela in international court. Venezuela's Hugo Chavez wants to tear up old contracts with Exxon, ConocoPhillips, Chevron, France's Total, and Norway's Statoil. Under the new terms, Venezuela would have 60% control over heavy crude projects in the Orinoco Belt, valued at $30 billion. Florida International University professor Ed Glab is a former Exxon executive. He says Venezuela's oil brinksmanship comes at a cost.
It does great damage to Venezuela's economic prospects to be ignoring the sanctity of contract you should not be using intimidation and the power of the state to ride roughshod over the legal system.
No indication yet as to whether the other oil companies will surrender control by the deadline. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
The markets lost more ground today. We'll talk to the man in Dallas and tell you exactly how bad it was when we do the numbers. Warren Buffett is the very definition of a tough act to follow. But now that he's 76 years old, the most successful investment mastermind of our times is thinking about his mortality. It was back in 1965, Warren Buffett bought control of a floundering textile manufacturer called Berkshire Hathaway. The firm now owns more than 60 companies, including insurance, furniture, and even candy companies. And it has major stakes in such names as Anheuser-Busch and Wells Fargo. Berkshire Hathaway stock has gone from $12 four decades ago to more than $107,000 for a single share today. Interviewed a while back for the documentary Oracle of Omaha, Buffett sounded reluctant to give up control.
I would like to see how far the company can be taken in terms of a collection of fine businesses run by the best managers in the world. And it's a lot of fun doing that, and it never ends.
Now, in his annual letter to shareholders, Buffett is hinting that all good things eventually do come to an end. Berkshire Hathaway owns Geico, and contrary to those TV ads, that insurance firm is not run by a lizard. It's headed by Lou Simpson, who's long been Buffett's heir apparent. But now Buffett concedes Simpson is too close to his own age to run things very long. Stockbroker Andy Kilpatrick wrote the Buffett biography of Permanent Value. He's followed Buffett's rise for many years. Appreciate you joining us.
Glad to.
Why has it taken Warren Buffett so long to really address this question of his successor? He's 76 years old. He's running a company with total assets of more than $248 billion. It can't be very comforting to investors to learn that he's still looking for the right candidate to become the investment guru who's going to replace him.
Well, Bob, I think, you know, if you go back the years, he was younger, and Lou Simpson, who would take it over, was younger. And now Simpson's 70. And I think Simpson could go a long time, but I just think that Buffett is, you know, is a long-term planner and wants to get somebody there in case of a crisis. And I don't think it's necessarily a worry, but I think he admits it's time to do it.
Yeah, he's been pretty reluctant to give up the reins. He likes doing what he's doing, right?
That's absolutely correct. He may joke about living forever, but it doesn't hurt to get somebody younger in there to get to know those people and show their stuff a little bit and plan for the next generation sort of thing.
You own Berkshire Hathaway stock yourself. Do you feel confident that they're going to find the right guy to become this investment guru?
You know, if you look over Buffett's history, he's hired however many CEOs of all these companies. No one's ever left him, and I think he has rarely made a poor decision. His real credit is probably understanding human nature and reading people as well as it is the stock market. And he's always come up with great people, and I think they'll find somebody great, but can you find a 500 hitter instead of a 350 hitter?
Buffett has said for a long time that he has left instructions should he go. Is that correct?
He's left instructions as to who is the CEO. The board has decided, and as I understand it, that slip of paper, whatever it is in his assistant's drawer. You might open it up, and it might be person X, but he can change that. If something happened to him tonight, there would be somebody at his desk in the morning.
And he's joked about this.
Oh, yeah, he
jokes
about it. And I think it's, the sense of humor sort of shows his good spirits and good health.
What has he said about it?
Well, he says he's not going, you know. And if he does die, to check his pulse, and he's coming back, or says, I'm doing seances for 10 years. He jokes about his own mortality, but he's planning very realistic because he knows it will happen. No question.
Andy Kilpatrick, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome, Bob. Good to talk to you. Enjoyed it.
Buffett, by the way, says he feels terrific, and he tells shareholders it's amazing what Cherry Coke and hamburgers will do for a fellow. He is a major investor in Coca-Cola. Does this sound at all familiar? Banks being accused of making out like bandits, literally, by ripping off customers with excessive overdraft charges. In this case, we're talking about banks in the United Kingdom. They had a bumper year in 2006. Four of the biggest just reported record profits, up a collective 20% over the year before. Consumer groups are seeing red over more than $9 billion in bounced check penalties. And they say hundreds of thousands of customers should get their money back. Marketplace's Stephen Beard has more from London.
Something is stirring in Britain. A revolt has been brewing. The usually apathetic members of this island race are up in arms.
We're seeing a real, genuine consumer revolution.
Martin Lewis is the rabble-rouser in chief. Through his website, moneysavingexpert.com, he's been whipping up the Brits into a lather over the banks and their charges for unauthorized overdrafts.
I believe what they're doing when it comes to bank penalty charges is unlawful and unfair and wrong, and everybody should get their money back.
People have downloaded more than 1 million documents from his website explaining how to claim back penalty charges. Emma Bandy of the consumer organisation Which says the British banks have blundered by stinging their customers every time they drift, however marginally, into the red. They've broken British contract law.
The default charges that banks charge their customers can only be used to cover the costs that the banks incur. We don't believe these charges are proportionate to the costs that the banks incur.
The banks usually charge £35 or $70, three or four times what it actually costs them to deal with an unauthorised overdraft. And it gets worse. Take Chandra Shah. The bank stopped one of his cheques that would have bounced and they slapped on a penalty charge. But that charge triggered another one.
The banks will apply a charge of £38, and by applying that charge, they would make you go overdrawn. So they'll apply another charge on the same day of £35.
Sally Barnes also fell victim to spiralling charges after her account had dipped only a few dollars into the red.
Several months in a row, I get charged sort of $350, maybe 4 months in a row. It was just ridiculous.
She admits she should have kept her account in credit, but the bank charges piled up.
I feel like they were causing the spiral to take place. So, you know, it's quite a deliberate way of them for making money out of their customers.
She has now successfully claimed back around $3,000 in unlawful charges. Some estimates suggest that the total reclaimed so far by British bank customers has hit $100 million. But this is just the start, says Martin Lewis. Every day, more people are downloading his Get Your Money Back guide.
60, 70,000 a day. There is no sign of stopping. I predict by the end of the year, at least 4 million will have been downloaded from my site alone to take on the banks. This is mass revolution.
The banks warn that all this could put Britain's free banking in jeopardy. Most banks don't charge for checking accounts if they're balanced. Analysts say the anti-bank fervour sweeping Britain may be partly because they're making so much money. Anyway, money lenders have been unpopular since biblical times. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Time for our look at what was, without a doubt, one of the most painful weeks on Wall Street in many a year. Let's find out if our business analyst and stockbroker, David Johnson, has survived it all in Dallas. You still breathing out there, David?
I'm still breathing, and I'm beginning to answer phones again and not make anybody open my mail before I do. I'll be all right.
Ever the optimist, though. At what point does this go from being a simple correction to being serious bloodletting?
Monday morning at about 10 a.m.
Yeah,
New York
check
time.
Your watch, huh?
No, I'm serious. Here's the deal. We tanked today, and you knew we were going to tank today, because traders don't want to own stocks going into the weekend. We've got all these rumors of things that could happen. I mean, there are rumors about a subprime lender that's in deep trouble, or a bank in trouble, or a hedge fund in trouble, or, you know, the carry trade could continue to unwind.
Hold up here. Carry trade. I saw that mentioned today. I tried to read about it, but I couldn't figure it out. What's the carry trade?
The carry trade is really an enormous operation. It's very legitimate. It does a lot of good, believe it or not, but it also can be very risky. Here, simply, let's say that there's an S&L on one corner and there's a bank right across the street on the other corner. Okay, so you go into the SNL and you borrow money, and they'll loan you some money for 4%. Okay?
Okay.
You walk across the street, and you buy a CD at the bank, and they pay you 4.5%.
So you've made a 0.5%.
Exactly, exactly. Now, if you like that, let me tell you how it could be a lot better. You can go to Japan, and you know how low their interest rates are.
Almost zero.
Exactly. And in fact, it's 0.5%. You can borrow money for 0.5%, get in an airplane, fly to the United States, buy U.S. Treasuries, get 4.5% on your money. So you're borrowing at 0.5%, and you're getting 4.5%.
So what's the worry?
Here's the worry. Because in Japan, they don't really loan you dollars. That's not their currency. It's yen. Okay. So they're going to give you yen, and sometime during your flight, you're going to have to exchange it for dollars. And then someday you're going to have to pay the Japanese back, and you're going to have to take your dollars and convert it into yen. Easy enough, right?
Right.
But here's the problem. The currency doesn't stay put. It keeps moving around. And what's been happening is the yen has been getting stronger against the dollar. So it takes more dollars to buy the yen. So at some point, you're not making 4, you're making 3.5, or you're making 3, or you're losing your shirt big time. And that's the concern.
Okay, with all those concerns flying around out there, what's to keep the market from just ratcheting right on down?
Well, nothing. I mean, I accept that there's just a staggering amount of money sitting on the sideline waiting for an opportunity to come in. And corporate America still seems to be making a lot of money. I don't think it's over overnight, but I think it's probably sooner than later.
So what you're saying is we just need a big infusion.
We need a three-day weekend. Is what we're
doing. Okay. Thanks. David Johnson in Dallas. Coming up, the growth of prize philanthropy.
A prize changes the way we think about problems. It doesn't say, can it be done? It says, when will it be done?
But first, let's do the numbers. For the record, this was the market's worst week in more than 4 years. The Dow Jones Industrial Average staggered back 120 points, 1%, to finish at 12,114. The Nasdaq stumbled down 36 points, 1.5%, to end at 2368. And the S&P 500 tumbled 16 points, 0.1%, to close at 1387. For the week, the Dow collapsed 4.25%, the Nasdaq crumpled 5.8%, and the S&P 500 dropped 4.4%. Here's what Brown can do for you if you're Airbus. The big European plane maker took it on the chin today after UPS canceled plane orders worth $3 billion. Airbus parent company EADS saw shares crash 4%. UPS shares unpacked almost 1%. Overseas, markets were down across the board. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 4.5%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Since 1937, managing money with a focus on consistent results over the long term. Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. And by the Speaking of Faith book tour beginning March 1st, you can meet Krista Tippett at her book signing in your city. Schedule online at speakingoffaith.org. Science and technology reports are supported by Boston Scientific, committed to delivering what's next in medical technology to help clinicians improve and extend lives. BostonScientific.com. Want to hear something on Marketplace again? Help is as near as your home computer. To find audio archives of past programs and additional special features, just go to the internet and log on to our website. The information you need when you need it is only a few clicks away. Just head over to marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at what's coming up Monday. The American Legion and veterans of foreign wars convene their Washington conventions. Some call it the most important meal of the day. National School Breakfast Week begins. This year, organizers entice kids to the cafeteria with international breakfast menus. And it's also National Procrastination Week. But you don't have to worry about that today. Have a good weekend. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Bob Moon, in for Kai Ryssdal. The House just passed a law that makes it easier for workers to form unions against the wishes of their paymasters. The Employee Free Choice Act does away with an employer's right to demand a secret ballot before a union can be formed. Labor groups say that a drawn-out election process gives employers time to intimidate workers. But management attorney and commentator Seth Borton says the new law has nothing to do with worker rights.
Employees should have the right to decide if they want a union after getting all the facts and opinions from the union, other workers, and the employer. Instead, unions want to skip election representation campaigns and rush workers back into the fold as a way of breathing life into a movement dying of its own accord. Why are unions so afraid of free speech? Maybe because the objective information workers get from other sources will contradict the union's one-sided, pie-in-the-sky sales pitch. For example, workers often think, incorrectly, that union bargaining means starting at the status quo and only improving wages and benefits. But unions understand that bargaining involves some give and take, and sometimes they negotiate provisions that benefit the union more directly than they do the workers. For example, why would an employer agree to spend its resources to automatically deduct union dues from workers' paychecks for the union? Maybe if the union agreed to save the company money by giving up a costly employee benefit, such as a company's 401k match. Union members also pay fees and assessments in addition to their union dues. They may well wonder what they're getting for all that money. After all, unions regularly provide six-figure salaries for their officers, some of whom double and triple dip by holding multiple union offices. And if unions want workers to believe that employers unduly control them, then workers might want to take a look at the unions too. All unions have constitutions, 100-page rule books, that serve as binding contracts between the union and each worker. So, say a union calls a strike, and a member keeps working to feed his or her family, to pay the bills. That worker can end up paying hefty union fines as well. Unions know that workers who consider all of this in making their free choice increasingly choose no union. And that's why they're asking their new friends in Congress to make it easier to force workers into it.
Attorney Seth Borton practices at the labor and employment firm of Kreitzman, Mortensen & Borton. We've heard some opposing views on this subject. You can find them at marketplace.org. Google is expected to announce this weekend that it's joining with the XPRIZE Foundation. The Internet powerhouse is going to help raise money for 10 new XPRIZEs to benefit humanity. Try Googling the XPRIZE Foundation, and you'll learn that the idea got started as a way to encourage commercial spaceflight. And now other prizes for all kinds of technological achievements are popping up everywhere. Pat Loeb has her eyes on the prize business.
Jim types in the command. You see that the car begins moving slowly down the street.
I'm riding in a pickup truck with grad student Rob Walters, but he's not driving. This is a robotic vehicle.
And we come up to our target velocity, which is, in this case, 15 miles per hour.
Rob is a member of the Golem Group. The team is competing for a $2 million prize from DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency. The mission? To build an unmanned vehicle that can drive through an urban area.
It's kind of like having the world's largest remote control toy, right?
DARPA is part of the Pentagon, which could use this technology in a war zone. In a way, the agency is returning to an old model for finding new technology. Government-sponsored contests spurred some of the earliest scientific innovations. Take the 1714 Longitude Prize.
The navigation of His Majesty's ships is the sole concern of His Majesty's officers.
The English Parliament offered £20,000 for an invention that would help sailors find their way at sea. It was so successful, the French government offered a prize for the preservation of food for its army. Canning was born. But the heyday of the scientific prize didn't last. Robin Hansen is an economist at George Mason University. He studied why prizes lost favor.
Scientists became more organized into various scientific societies, and they lobbied a lot for more grant-like funding. But a grant, it doesn't come with much in the way of strings. It's just a pile of money you can do with what you want.
Grants became the dominant force in scientific research. But today, grants are starting to give a little bit of room back to prizes, thanks largely to the passion of Peter Diamandis.
I've had a passion to travel into space myself since I've been a child. It's my mission in life.
Diamandis, the son of Greek immigrants, is the founder of the XPRIZE. When he realized he wasn't going to become an astronaut, he came up with the idea of offering a prize for inventors who could launch a private space flight. In 1996, he convinced the Ansari family of wealthy entrepreneurs to put up $10 million to award the winner. The challenge inspired 26 teams from 7 countries, and in 2004, Mojave Aerospace Ventures collected the prize.
Of the original Ansari XPRIZE teams, at least 8 or 9 are now privately building ships going forward. We gave birth not to just a single ship, but an industry.
Actually, Diamandis gave birth to 2 new industries, commercial spaceflight and what he calls prize philanthropy. Diamandis convinces wealthy individuals to back his prizes.
If they give money to a university or research, they might get 50% on the dollar spent towards their cause. But if they fund a prize, it's magical. They get tenfold the amount of money spent to try and win their prize money, and they only pay upon success.
Diamandis has since launched an automotive XPRIZE for a super-efficient vehicle, an XPRIZE for genomic sequencing, and tomorrow he'll enter a whole new arena. He's enlisted Google as a corporate sponsor to begin raising money for 10 new prizes aimed at social problems such as poverty.
A prize changes the way we think about problems. It doesn't say, can it be done? It says, when will it be done?
Diamandis has inspired others. The Methuselah Foundation is offering the M-Prize for extending the human lifespan. The U.S. government is offering the H-Prize for breakthroughs in hydrogen fuel. Sir Richard Branson of the Virgin Group is offering $25 million for scrubbing the air of greenhouse gases. A new heyday for prizes is here, and there is something undeniably alluring about the idea that anyone can be the next great innovator. The Golem Group proves it.
We are at the epitome of what the intended audience was. The sort of garage team that would come out of nowhere.
Engineer Richard Mason, who's 36, started the group with $50,000 he won on the game show Jeopardy. His partner, Caltech alum Jim Radford, has never even had a regular job.
I'd rather work on something like this, even if it's a small chance of return, because it's more challenging and more fun, and I think there's something cool about it. Like, the cool factor really goes a long way for me.
In Los Angeles, I'm Pat Loeb for Marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note, just last week, a private equity group announced plans to buy Texas utility TXU for a record $45 billion. Today, federal regulators say that unknown investors may have engaged in illegal insider trading ahead of that deal. Well, unknown to us, but maybe not to the SEC, the agency's gotten approval from a federal court to freeze over $5 million in an account linked to unusual activity. Only yesterday, the SEC announced it had busted another big insider trading ring. And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Another bad day for the markets. Today, the Dow dropped 120 points, about 1%. The Nasdaq lost 36 points, 1.5%. And the S&P 500 fell 16 points, 0.1%. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste Wesson. The executive producer is J.J. Yore. Next time, lawyers of the world revolt. Who needs more money?
With these raises, they don't want their billable hour requirements to go up. They don't want to work more in order to get this increase in their paycheck.
I'm Bob Moon. Kai's back on Monday. In the meantime, TGIF.
American Public Media.